So you were alive, I would have thought, in the 70s. So what kind
of... That's sweet of you to say. It's very sweet of you to say. I put a lot of moisturizer on the old crow's feet.
So was
my
that...
Russell Crowe's feet.
Yeah, oh, uh-huh. So was that part of the intriguing aspect of doing this?
No. I don't... I mean, the 70s never really... just seemed dirty, honestly, mm-hmm. and not in an interesting way, you know? It's not the 80s. In fact, it's 10 less. So, no, I never really, I mean, the 80s, I grew up in the 80s, so mm-hmm. it was more, that's more sort of an interesting time to me. But the 70s, you know, it wasn't the draw, but it was fun to do. You're going to film this?
Thank you, man.
It's just new for me. Oh. You know, I'm a little self-conscious.
How about doing comedy, you know? I mean, we've seen actually the last two pictures, we've seen you cutting it off, you know? I mean, are you very comfortable doing that? And what about finding a rapport with Russell? Finding chemistry, I mean.
No, that was pretty easy. Russell was really, just from early on, I didn't really, you know, everybody reads a script differently, and I read it as an opportunity to really do a lot of physical comedy and take it into a kind of a broad place. But I didn't know if that's how everyone saw it, you know, and Russell was really great. I think one of our first scenes together was that bathroom stall scene, and I kind of went early to set to work out the door gag, and I kind of smelt smoke, and I looked, and Russell was there smoking, and he was just kind of very seriously telling me how he thought the door could bounce better, and we were very seriously having a conversation about, as I have my pants around my ankles in a bathroom stall, and I thought it was going to work, you know, that we were going to have fun.
What about the Lou Costello thing? Was that something you just came up with on, or was that in the script?
Yeah. No, my parents were too cheap to get a real video membership when we were kids. Like, we didn't have a Blockbuster membership or something. They just took us to the library because the movies were free. And there was just Bible movies and Abbott and Costello films. So those were some of the first movies I ever watched, and I loved them, and I watched them. I wore them out. And, you know, this, when we got to that scene, it seemed like a great opportunity to put one of my favorite gags.
So on that, how much freedom did you have to ad-lib?
Yeah, I think Shane Black gets bored easy. So he just, you know, we always shot this script as it was written, but then he just wanted us to kind of see where it would go, and he came up with a lot of new ideas on the day as well. So it was just that kind of a process.
When you screamed in pain, how many tries till you got to the right note?
Oh, the pitch of that?
Yeah,
yeah. That's just how I scream, honestly. So it was nice to be able to, you know, make a little money on it,
yeah.
You know, make a little lemonade out of those lemons.
Does it worry you when you start a movie? Because this movie depends so much on the rapport between you and Russell. Did it concern you at all that maybe there wouldn't be, or did you meet beforehand and talk and get the different takes on the film and what you thought and what he thought, and did you just feel?
What's the question?
Did you were you worried about, because the rapport is so important to this film? Because you don't know if you're going to have a rapport with another actor, or are you both
right.
Such good actors, which
but,
you are.
But Russell's so good. Matter. You know, Russell is whatever he says he is in any role. If Russell Crowe says he's Noah, he's Noah. You never doubt it. You know, if he says he's, you know, Maxim, you know, he's Gladiator, he's Gladiator. He's every character he says that he is. I've never doubted anything he's done, so I knew he would be Jackson Healy, and I think, you know, I think it's a bonus that we had fun together, but part of the, you know, what's so great about Shane is that he knows what he's doing, and I think he cast us not because he thought we were funny, because he thought it would be funny to have two guys that are so serious be in something so silly. And so even if Russell and I didn't have the rapport that we have, I think it still would have worked on that level.
Have you signed for another one? Because it certainly seems like it's looks like they're
no. I mean, we'll see if people want one. But we had a good time making it.
Does being a dad help you play a dad, or is it just it's not really one thing or the other? I'm assuming not this kind of father.
Yeah, he's the worst father of all time. So wait a second. Yeah, it did. It helped me a lot, actually.
But it doesn't really matter one way or the other.
I mean, it helps to have done something before you do it on screen. Sure. Okay.
What was it like to have that girl sort of in the middle of it? Because she really is more a part of the story. That she's not just like some kid freaking out. She's really sort of in the middle of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, she will. And Gowrie's such a pro, and she's so talented. And she, it was one of those great moments where in the audition where they'd seen a lot of kids, but I read with like 5 or 10 of them. I don't remember how many, but Anne Gowrie was the last one. And it's one of those great moments where an actor comes in and they, you know, because you don't know how you're going to play certain aspects of your character, and then they just by the nature of who they are and how they're playing their character, suddenly you know exactly how to play yours. So we got along great right off the bat. And, you know, there's some touchy stuff in the movie. It really certainly, you know, walks, if not crosses the line in certain respects. And, but, you know, we just were very careful with that and handled those scenes almost like a fight scene where you make sure that the jokes land, but that nobody gets hurt, you know.
Are you a lightweight in real life? And did you partake in Cinco de Mayo celebrations last night?
The drinking thing? Oh, I think I went out with Russell right before we started shooting, and I think I was just drunk the entire film just from that one night, honestly.
Do you guys party though? I mean, like, do you go for a drink after shooting? Just like, I just want to go home, forget it.
These were pretty physical. It was a pretty physical film, and lots, the big days, and we were in Atlanta pretending it was... summer, but it was winter. It was like -10 degrees. So most of the time we went home, but we did have a big night. Russell was very generous and rented out this bar for the whole crew and the cast to watch a game of his rugby team, and we were all hurting for the next 2 months.
So on the physicality, did you guys do any like Krav Maga or hand-to-hand combat training on set?
No.
So the court, because it was really well choreographed.
Yeah, Russell's fight scenes were great. Mine were pretty silly. But he's done so many stunts. I mean, it was funny. As soon as the read-through ended, I saw Russell sketching something, and I looked over, and it was like, he was drawing a hot tub that you could, it was almost a blueprint for a hot tub you could build based on this drawing. It was so accurate. He was immediately talking to Shane about how the dimensions of a hot tub wouldn't allow for the scene that had been written. So he was just immediately went into stunt mode, but it pays off because all of his stuff really.
Well, you fall with grace. And that takes a skill.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. How much of that did you actually do physically?
I did a lot of it, you know, because there was a certain comedic element to it. Although my stunt guy, Brett, he actually started in the beginning of his career, played the Scarecrow in a Wizard of Oz play. So we talked a lot about that and sort of incorporating some of that physicality into March, but it was amazing because he had just come from Fury, and he was doing a scene where he was like, there was all these like bodies laying in a field, and one of his friends, another stunt guy, was going around bayoneting through the chest dummies, and his friend mistook him for a dummy and stuck a bayonet through his chest, and it impaled him. And 2 weeks later, he was on our set, ready to get down
like a boss.
So it was. I had to do a lot of those stunts just because it seemed like, you know, what kind of person would I be if I asked Brett to do those things, you know? But anyway, we had a great partnership, and I really liked working with him.
Kind of a silly question. Did you successfully question the mermaids?
No, I never could never get their ear. It was too fast.
Were you tracking the script? Because it's not unusual coming from Warner Brothers. Because they do mid-range stuff, but it seems like the other studios just won't. You might see like a Weinstein do something like this. But I mean, like, how did this come to you? And were you surprised to get this kind of script instead of at a studio?
Yeah, I think they kind of came on board afterwards. It didn't come through Warner Brothers initially. I think after it had all been set up, they sort of stepped in. But I just got it through, you know, I had like a bit of a relationship with Joel over the course of a couple of years. And he said, I read it the same day I got it. And the next day I said I was in, you know, I really just loved the script. But I grew up on Shane Black movies and I grew up on Joel Silver movies. I mean, my first exposure to what Hollywood was like behind the scenes was when Joel Silver started screaming at Roger Rabbit in the beginning of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Shane Black wrote Monster Squad, and then he wrote all these other films that I grew up on. So for me, it was a no-brainer. And then to know that Russell was playing that role for me was like something I had to do.
You had some big movies coming. I mean, can you talk about stuff like Blade Runner? Is there anything you tell us about that?
There's literally a sniper on that roof if I say anything about Blade Runner.
And La La Land. Are you singing and dancing in that?
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's up to you.
I don't recall seeing you do that. Have we seen you do singing in that?
I don't think so, and you probably won't want to again, honestly. But I gave it a shot. I had a great time. I really had a special experience on that movie. Damien's an incredible filmmaker, and it was a big undertaking for him. I mean, really, you know, just for his second film to take something like that on. And just so many talented people. I'm very excited for people to see the film.
Are musical numbers on location, are you doing? Are you in a stage and controlled environment?
Most of them are in practical locations. There's one where we had a whole freeway overpass for a day, and they had people were dancing on cars, and it was pretty amazing.
That sounds great.
And he shot the film in a lot, like very long takes, so there's not a lot of cuts in the musical numbers. They're generally
that puts more pressure on you as a dancer, right?
Yeah, we practice. Emma and I practice for a month and a half just for one scene, and because we had to do it at Magic Hour, and we only would have, I think, four or five takes, and we had to get it in one of them.
She hadn't done that either. So you guys were both out there, sort of.
Yeah.
Stepping on each other's toes.
Exactly. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. When is that thing coming?
I think around Christmas.
Can you talk a little bit about Terrence Malick as well? I mean, is that unique experience, as everyone says?
It is. It's unlike it. I'm sure I'll never have another one like it. I certainly never had one like it before.
I understand he chases the image more than he chases the actor. Like, I understand he kept guys standing around the Pacific while he goes shoots an exotic bird. He's got Clooney and Travolta standing around. Like, what are we doing? I mean, is it that kind of thing? Is like.
Well, there's no like hierarchy in his films. You know, it's you're there to help Terry explore, you know, his instincts, and so you're part of the crew. You're there to help. You know, and so you know, there's no, it's not a traditional set. I mean, in our case, especially, we didn't even have, there was no script, so you're just sort of every day is an adventure.
Do you love that challenge, just jumping off, sort of flying without a net? I mean, does it feel like that?
With Terry, yeah. You know, I mean, it's amazing to watch him work. He really is a master, yeah. You know.
And have you seen footage come together? Is it playing as you thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still editing it, you know. But that's the beauty of the way he works, is that he works in his own time, and he makes films his own way, and, you know, it's very rare these days. I feel very lucky to have been a part of that.
Is there anybody else you'd love to work with that you haven't had a chance yet? Since you have challenges, it seems.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, hope so. Lots of people.
Okay. Is it all the usual A.S. names? Is it Martin Scorsese and all? I mean, any names?
Of course, it would be great to work with the greats, you know, and certainly the people that have influenced me and that I grew up on, but so many new filmmakers as well, you know. I mean, I was so excited to get to work with Damien.
Are you looking to tackle directing again too?
Yeah.
I mean, is that something that now that you've done it, do you feel like more confident going into it again, or does it just still feel as overwhelming?
I think it's not as overwhelming as it was the first time, just because I didn't know, you know, I'd never made a film before, but it just takes a long time, you know. It's different from, I mean, acting, you can do it in a few months, but, you know, it took 3 years to make that film, so.
Yeah.
But I have a few things that I'm about to get ready to do.
Last question.
Soundtrack is on point. Yeah, the Al Green was Love and Happiness was the ish. How do you feel about music of that period? Even though you said you grew up in the 80s, are you a fan of music from that era?
Yeah, sure, I am. I mean, again, I'm more kind of like, I guess just the 80s is my time, but I thought the music was great. Joel Silver is really responsible for the soundtrack on this. He brought like 90% of those songs to the table, and he made this incredible vinyl, and he's really been like hyper involved in that.
The Hannibal Buress, that scene, that was
cool. Yeah, Hannibal's amazing in that.
Yeah.
I hope there's another version, like an uncut version or something that comes out after, because that scene was like a short film in itself, and Hannibal did so much amazing work, and they had to cut it for time, but I hope people get to see what he did. Yeah, he's I'm a huge fan. I was so thrilled when he came on board.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ron.